Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. This is Susan Vida. I am the co-founder of eCareDiary.com and your host for today's show. Today, we're talking about hearing loss and how to better understand it when it happens to one of our loved ones if we're caring for an aging parent or an aging loved one. So to help shed light on this, we have a very distinguished guest, Dr. Noreen Gibbons, who is the lead audiologist of High Health Innovations, which is a United Health Group company. High Health Innovations offers an alternative hearing aid program nationwide. Dr. Noreen Gibbons' responsibilities include assisting patients with hearing testing, fittings, and oral rehabilitation, oral being A-U-R-A-L. And she also helps ensure clinical quality throughout the company. Dr. Gibbons has more than 25 years of experience helping people with hearing loss, including a background in large medical facilities, and as an advisor to local chapters of the Hearing Loss Association of America. Dr. Gibbons, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Susan. I appreciate it.
So, Dr. Gibbons, how common is hearing loss?
You know, I was doing a little research on this subject yesterday for another presentation that I'm doing, and the numbers still shock me the more I read them. It's actually 26 million adults age 50 and older have what we call clinically significant hearing loss, and that's actually from the Institutes of Medicine. But among people 65 and older, it's the third most common chronic condition.
My goodness, that's pretty surprising. So why is hearing loss so often overlooked?
The biggest challenge is it's invisible. It progresses so slowly, and without a hearing test, you really cannot diagnose it. You can make assumptions. Certainly there are signs and symptoms of hearing loss that we can talk about a little bit later. But without access to a hearing test to evaluate it. And the other problem is that some frequencies or pitches are affected more than others. So it can take a while before it becomes obvious enough to the person that has it that they're willing to pursue that testing.
And if I might ask, this is very interesting, but is it also possible that there is sometimes denial that there is hearing loss, which also leads to, I would imagine later diagnosis.
That is definitely an issue that we see in people, and we're not really sure. I mean, there's certainly a stigma about hearing loss. People don't seem to have challenges wearing eyeglasses or contact lenses the way they do hearing aids. There's that concern that it might be associated with being older, and that's not necessarily true. As I mentioned, the 26 million age 50 and over, but even from age 12, we can start to see hearing loss develop. But typically, it is associated with some negative issues, and I think that's part of the denial that goes on. It's very challenging, sometimes even for people themselves, to recognize that they're having trouble.
Wow. So tell me about, is hearing loss hereditary? It's something that I think I'm actually worried about because I am now seeing it in my father, and my grandfather had the issue. He's passed away, but I'm starting to see issues with my own father. So is hearing loss hereditary?
It certainly can be. There can be risk factors, additional health factors such as things like diabetes and heart disease are definitely associated with increased rates of hearing loss. So because that can be hereditary, but hearing loss on its own can be hereditary. We see that often in children, but of course that's a little bit separate issue. There's also some reasons to think that susceptibility to noise-induced hearing loss is hereditary. We often see that in families, and when you mention your father and grandfather, and there typically being more noise exposure in men, We tend to think, is it susceptibility that's been a greater issue? Were they ever exposed to noise? That's mm-hmm. such a big issue in this country, and especially for men, for various reasons, military exposure, noise exposure from work, power tools, all sorts of challenges. Might be the same way with women in, 10 or 20 years, but at this point, we do know there's hereditary issues with hearing loss, yes.
So, well, thank you for shedding light on that. What is the first sign of hearing loss?
Most people will actually say things like, I can hear fine, but I can't understand. If I could tell you the number of times I've had someone tell me that, and there's definite reasons for that. Again, I mentioned about some pitches or frequencies are heard better than others. High frequency parts of speech are important for understanding. The lower frequency vowels, they carry the energy, and we can hear those much easier. But high-pitched parts of speech are important for understanding. They are also where more hearing loss occurs. So we've got this double whammy going there. And it tends to be people will feel like they're not hearing well from a distance. They might even be more subtle than that. They might just not enjoy group situations anymore, or find it challenging to be in a room full of a lot of people talking, difficulty like that. It tends to be more understanding, difficulty hearing on the phone, or not enjoying the sound of music quite as much as they used to. Those subtle things that show up.
What do you mean by high-frequency noises in conversation? What are you referring to there?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked. It's more the consonants like the S as in Sam or F as in fish. Those higher-pitched sounds, when we speak them in normal conversational speech, they're at about 20 to 30 decibels. So that's pretty quiet, and that's on a hearing level scale, whereas vowel sounds reach more 40 to 50 decibels. They're much louder, so they're easier to hear. So again, those high frequency, the words, the sounds that would help us distinguish fish from sit or hit from hip, those sorts of things. So those high frequency beginning and endings of words are really where most of the problems are first noted.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for, that was really interesting. I had never really understood, the high frequencies of certain sounds in our language. Can you now tell us a little bit about tinnitus, I think it's pronounced, or the ringing in the ears?
Yeah, tinnitus and tinnitus are actually both used interchangeably. It kind of depends on the area of the country and what you heard the first time. So both are used, but it is a very common issue. It can be more common in people with hearing loss, but some people just have tinnitus without any accompanying hearing loss, which is also a challenge to understand. There's a lot of theories about tinnitus. It's a hard one to treat sometimes because we don't often know what caused it. In fact, there's a theory that we all have it and something triggers it to make it loud enough so that we're aware of it. It can often be helped by the use of hearing aids. If it's a constant problem throughout the day, people are having a hard time concentrating, and they also have hearing loss, we definitely recommend hearing aids as a first attempt to treat it to reduce the annoyance. Doesn't make it go away, but it does reduce the annoyance.
For the person who doesn't have this experience, what would tinnitus sound like?
Oh, boy, that's they're usually people say ringing, but it can be ringing, humming, buzzing. I've heard people say clicking. Some people put a more musical tone to it. They'll say it just sounds like an orchestra is playing. That's a little less common. It really varies quite a bit. And unfortunately, the tone or the description of it doesn't give us a good diagnostic indicator most of the time. It very rarely is the cause of a serious a result of a serious medical issue, but it can be pretty alarming for people if it comes on suddenly.
Okay, and is tinnitus itself pretty common as we get older, or and as a sign of hearing loss?
It's not one of the common things that people come in for when they are coming in to seek hearing health care. It's usually the hearing loss that's causing more of the trouble. But often we will ask those questions. Do you notice any ringing in their ears? In your ears? And they'll say, well, yeah, I do notice some of that. It's interesting to note how often noise exposure and hearing loss and tinnitus go hand in hand. I don't know if you've heard this, but the most common disability, unfortunately, coming out of our returning conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan for our veterans is hearing loss and tinnitus. It is a big problem for these folks.
Wow. So that's my goodness. So I imagine you probably have experienced this some yourself with some of your patients.
Yes. Yeah. There can be such a range of reactions to it. There's an organization called the American Tinnitus Association, which I'd highly encourage mm-hmm. people to go on their website and look a little bit. They do most of the research and the medical updates and provide a lot of support, because for some people it can be an overwhelming issue, again, even without any hearing loss, or perhaps some of the traditional methods for treating hearing loss and tinnitus are not effective. So the American Tinnitus Association is a good resource.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. And I also want to reiterate that your work as an advisor to the Hearing Loss Association of America. I was not aware of this organization and was very happy to hear about the fact that it exists for people who want more information on general hearing loss. So thank you for both of those, referring both of those. Let me ask you about what are some of the factors that determine how much hearing loss will affect the person?
The effect of the hearing loss will really depend on their everyday environment. For example, one of the reasons that I was prompted to contact you and talk to caregivers in particular was a patient of mine who came in for a follow-up appointment after I fit him with a new set of hearing aids. And, the routine, how are things going and what's happening? And he said, well, I only really wear them when I'm at home, which, of course, audiologists always, we want people to wear their hearing aids full-time, but we're not going to go around and check in the morning. But anyway, I said, and I kind of did a double take. I said, no one's ever really said that before. Usually they say, well, I wear them when I go out. He said, well, I'm the caregiver for my wife, and she's very ill, and her voice is very weak. And my hearing loss was interfering with my ability to hear her, which was an aha moment for me. I thought, my goodness, I've heard that before, but never directly with that kind of experience. So you can see how even a so-called mild hearing loss, which I don't like that term, but a mild hearing loss could create a really significant problem if someone has communication needs that are at all challenging. For example, someone they're taking care of is ill and the voice level tends to drop quite a bit with illness. We know that people can't project their voices quite as much. So that their communication demands has a lot to do with how much it's going to affect them.
Wow. I never thought of it from that perspective, but I could certainly see that being the case. As many caregivers are themselves over the age of 50, and with the statistic you shared, my goodness, I'm sure hearing loss affects many caregivers who are out there. So thank you for sharing that. And so we talked a little earlier on about, hearing loss being somewhat hereditary, and that particularly for men who've been exposed to machinery, loud machinery, that they would develop hearing loss from that. Are there other ways in which people develop hearing loss aside from hereditary and exposure to, environmental issues?
It's interesting you asked that question, because I was thinking about how when I 25 years ago or more, when I was in school, we used to throw out a number. About 50% of the time we know what's caused the hearing loss, and about 50% we have no idea. So we have to look a lot at studies that have kind of correlated. For example, diabetes. People with diabetes are 50% more likely to have a hearing loss. So that's probably due more to the vascular effects of diabetes, and heart disease is known to have, people with heart disease are known to have an increased risk for hearing loss. Again, it's probably because of the inner ear relying on an adequate blood supply, and so that will have an issue. Kidney disease, the way the inner ear and the kidneys function is actually very similar, and there's a lot of similarities in challenges that can affect both. Ototoxic medications are an issue as well. There's some medications.
What is that called again?
Ototoxic. O-T-O. T-O-X-I-C.
Ototoxic.
So, yeah, there's some different medications that are given in severe situations. Some of the chemotherapy agents used, especially early on, were causing a lot of hearing loss until we recognized what was going on and dosages were adjusted and there were some changes made. But IV antibiotics used to treat serious infections can cause hearing loss. So there's a lot of insults to the inner ear. It's sometimes hard to do a cause and effect study because we don't know exactly which part of the inner ear is affected, and so you have to rely on some additional information and history and that sort of thing. But definitely there's a lot of assaults to the ear out there.
My goodness, that's fascinating and scary at the same time. My goodness, and I've known people who've gone through chemotherapy. I have never thought to ask if there are consequences of, hearing loss as a result. So that would be very interesting to understand that better. But thank you for sharing this. So what are some other health risks and unexpected problems that could be associated with hearing loss?
Well, I think one of the most alarming issues that we've only recently been made aware of have to do with the increased risk of dementia and hearing loss. And I am definitely not saying dementia causes hearing loss or hearing loss causes dementia. We don't really understand what the relationship is, but there was a study done at Johns Hopkins University or program a couple years back that was published in a couple of journals talking about kind of a prospective study where they started following people. They had done hearing testing, and then they followed them for many other issues, many other reasons. But they found that, in summary, after following these people for 8 or 9 years, I think it was, a double the risk of dementia with a mild hearing loss, 3 times with moderate, and the numbers just go up from that point.
Oh,
so
my goodness, that is shocking.
It is, and it was actually pretty upsetting information because then it's something that's received a great deal of attention. That it needs further study as well. But we just simply don't know what this relationship is. We definitely know there is one, and it is something to watch carefully.
That is, I have to say, one of the most, fascinating and yet upsetting piece of information that I've heard of late. But I'm thinking, as we were talking about some of the causes of hearing loss, is it perhaps related to blood flow? Maybe if there's not enough blood flow going to the ear, there must not be a lot of blood flow going to the brain, and maybe that's kind of where my logical thinking is going,
Wow. Dr. Lin, the lead author of this study, has a term that he's using, cognitive overload, which really refers to the amount of resources available when someone has an untreated hearing loss. You're putting a huge cognitive load on an individual, and perhaps that has something to do with it. It is research that will be very carefully watched, I know, by many over the next few years to try to get a little bit better answers. The Institute of Medicine is having a workshop in, I believe, January of next year to really take a look carefully and see if we treat the hearing loss, does it make a difference in the outcomes? The data is not clear. And, you know, I don't want to unnecessarily alarm people, but at the same time, as an audiologist, I know we have a responsibility to make some of this information known. And that's part of our challenge as a profession. By the way, October is Audiology Awareness Month, so kind of nice to be on the radio at this point. But just spreading that message about treating it.
Great. Well, I think that sounds like a topic for another radio show, and maybe, you know, try to understand sort of the further developments as they become available. So thank you for sharing that. I really greatly appreciate it. So let's now switch gears a little bit, and I would like to talk about basically what are some of the differences in practice between what you do as an audiologist and let me see if I can pronounce this correctly, otolaryngologist?
Yes, an otolaryngologist is a physician, often a surgeon who's more specially trained to diagnose, treat, and provide surgical intervention for many issues related to the ear. We have otolaryngologists, and then we have otologists and neuro-otologists, so kind of subspecialty like so many areas of medicine. And a neuro-otologist is someone who would only work with ears and hearing-related, balance-related issues, tend to be, again, more surgical and medical intervention. An audiologist is educated and trained in the diagnostic testing of hearing and balance as well, and then also some treatment, many of the treatment strategies, hearing aids, amplification, cochlear implants, balance assessment and therapy. So very different. Audiologists are not physicians. Most audiologists in the country at this point do have doctorates. Clinical doctorate is the minimum standard in most universities.
And let me ask you, because this is something I wanted to ask you before, which is, what are some of the questions that people who suspect they have a hearing issue, what can they ask themselves to know if they have a hearing problem?
Oh, boy. It's until they actually go in and have a hearing test. I hesitate because I really think the diagnostic testing is so important, having a good thorough test. If someone listening suspects they're having trouble understanding, notices difficulty on the phone or in groups of people, then they really need to go in and have the testing done just to find out what's going on. That is the first step.
And who would do that test? Would it be like a person's own primary care physician? Do they need to go to a specialist, an audiologist, or...
There's a number of different routes that they can get their testing done. For example, in our program, we would set them up with one of our field staff who's available, has the equipment to go do the testing in an office. And if that's not available to them, a primary care doctor often has an audiologist that they can refer to, or an ear, nose, and throat practice they can refer those patients to. Lots of different options. We are trying in our program to get more primary care doctors. We have a hearing test kit that we're encouraging, especially if they don't have an audiologist close by that they can refer patients to. So a lot of different options, but it will require at least that initial visit to go in and get the testing done.
And may I ask, what does the testing involve, normally?
Yeah, good question, because it's pain-free. Everyone needs to know that. It involves,
yeah,
it is. It involves asking people to respond to tones of varying levels. So different tones are presented, and we assess the lowest level at which a person is able to hear those tones and compare that to a scale of normal hearing. We usually also assess their ability to understand speech. Words are presented, usually recorded list, and we get a percentage score of their ability to understand speech. We also want to look at the middle ear. There's a couple of different ways of making sure there's not a problem in the middle ear. Now, most adults do not have middle ear hearing loss, but it's always important for us to at least take a look in the ear and do the testing that we can to rule that out. Most hearing loss is in the inner ear for adults. It's often called nerve deafness. We got away from using that term nerve deafness because it's a sensory slash nerve problem, which is probably too complicated to get into without pictures, but we call it sensory neural hearing loss. It's really usually referring to the same thing.
This is very, I have to tell you, I'm fascinated by what we just discussed. And Dr. Gibbons, I really appreciate your time and your commitment and enthusiasm for the world of hearing and being willing to speak about this subject, especially to help educate caregivers out there who are listening to this program. I want to invite you back because I want to have a discussion with you about hearing aids, because that seems to be a pretty big topic amongst many caregivers and myself and our family, where, you know, the my father, for example, doesn't like to wear his hearing aids. They don't, some of, you know, he's tried various kinds. They don't fit well or they're uncomfortable. And I would love to spend some time discussing that with you, because we've gotten a lot of questions about that too. And I want to thank you so much for having me. And it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. I want to also share with the audience again that Dr. Noreen Gibbons is with High Health Innovations, and you can learn more about High Health Innovations at highhealthinnovations.com, and it's spelled high as in hello, high, H-I, healthinnovations.com. I want to thank our audience for tuning in and invite you to join us next week on Tuesday, October 15th at 2 p.m., when we have Angela Taylor from the Lewy Body Dementia Association to help us understand what is Lewy Body Dementia and what the LBDA is doing to advocate for families and advance research. LBDA being the acronym for Lewy Body Dementia Association. To learn more about eCare Diary and our shows, visit our website, ecarediary.com. Registration is free. You have access to all of our radio shows, present and past. We have all of our past radio shows available online. And you also will have immediate access to our personal Care Diary tool, which is exclusive to you and whomever you want to have access to that. You can also find us on social media, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And I am at, my Twitter address is ecare_diary. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Dr. Noreen Gibbons, thank you so much for being on our show. We really enjoyed having you.
Thank you, Susan. I look forward to coming back.
Yeah, we certainly need to have you back. Thank you again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.